So, we'll now move on to this afternoon's presentation, which is Dr. Barry Norton from the British Museum, where he's been for around a year. He is a computer scientist who has been working on the Book of the Dead project using various applications of CDoc, CRM, Thurberu, and RDF to approach these manuscripts in various different ways. So, Barry,
thank you. I shall use a little bit of the opportunity to promote ResearchBase, which you may or may not have heard of. I should certainly acknowledge to start that Dominic Oldman, who I think many of you know, unfortunately, even though we were double billed, Dominic's away on a well-deserved holiday this week, having secured our continuing funding on the ResearchBase project from the Mellon Foundation. So we're looking forward to two more years' work on that project. Previously to joining the project almost exactly a year ago, I was consulting into the project, so I had a bit of contact. And I'm glad also that Alison is here, who's also done some work on ResearchBase so far. As part of the IS department at the British Museum, the project actually moves now to the Collections Directorate, as I was told today, I'm properly to refer to it. So we're very much looking forward to growing the team and continuing the project. And the work with the Book of the Dead has good contact with what we're doing, but some distinctions that I want to draw out and maybe even make a connection to another couple of projects that we're carrying out alongside our main work. So I think I've acknowledged everyone, so I'll move on. I did ask that excuse be made that I'm a software engineer by training and then a computer scientist by PhD. So I hope that I am not too technical, but please both forgive me and interrupt me if I am being too technical. I have deliberately left some technical details in the slides as something that you might like to look at later, but that are not necessary to understand all of the brackets and the formal language in order to get a sense of what we're doing in this project. I'll try and mention that where it's appropriate. So, the Book of the Dead. I'm not a classicist, but this is my understanding. It's a funerary text which arose in Middle Kingdom Egypt, where there's an abstract idea of a set of spells that would help the transition to the afterlife for the dead. And these spells would be rendered on papyrus or on linen, actually in wrapping bodies and coffins. It consists, even though it's an abstract idea, the Book of the Dead, I'll say more about that in a second, it consists of a codified set of spells which can be collected and numbered, as they have, with more or less similar content, and which often, when they're represented on a papyrus or on a linen, are accompanied by a vignette, which will be a stereotypical representation of the characters in that scene and an interaction between them that relates to the text. An important point about the work of Malcolm Marshall, who I'll talk more about, that we're trying to bring online and make more interactive than just a linear narrative in a book, is that he identifies different traditions where surviving linens and papyri can be grouped together to try and recreate the schools that made these artifacts, okay? Where the clusters have some significant differences from one another, so they're more or less well-defined as clusters, but also some degree of internal variation over time and between different makers within those schools. So what the currently print text that we're trying to bring online brings out is these relationships and clusterings which we would like to represent digitally, specifically using semantic web technologies. So encoding this in RDF and building a website around the RDF representations of the interrelationships. Now, everyone's favorite source if you're a computer scientist is Wikipedia, that gets some things right and wrong, starts off very well. It says, there is no single canonical idea of the Book of the Dead. Absolutely right, that's what motivates this project. Says the surviving papyri, which I'll come back to, it's not wholly true, as I've sort of given away already, vary, and they vary considerably in their illustration. Well, in fact, they vary in their text as well as their vignettes, so it's not the word I would have chosen, illustration. But it's a start, it's somewhat of a guide. The real one of the experts on this field who's worked with the British Museum is Malcolm Mosher. In this project at the moment, we're dealing with his first of several volumes about the Book of the Dead, where in the first volume he takes spells 1 to 16 as they're traditionally numbered. As I said, he collects variants on these spells into what he calls versions that represent the traditions. For each one of those traditions, he provides a translation into English and uses some annotation in the text to suggest the variations within that tradition. So given the manuscript that we have, there's a continuous narrative translation of the spell divided into paragraphs, and he uses color to represent things like the early part of this tradition versus variations that appeared later within that tradition. And then within the manuscript, he also relates each spell to those surviving museum objects where he's found fragments of text to bring together and make this aggregated translation. So several of his objects are at the British Museum, but they're also at the Louvre, at the Getty, kind of globally distributed. For our part, we're particularly interested in the relationship to our objects because as part of research space and broader efforts, we've made a lot of effort towards semantic publishing of our collection. So, there is Malcolm Mosher. And I got very excited when I first heard about him because the first profile you find for him is on Hewlett-Packard's site. He's both a technologist, yay, and an Egyptologist. Even if you read down a few sentences, you see that among the projects he was working on, he was assigned to RDF. So I got very excited. Unfortunately, that being 1988, RDF didn't stand for Resource Description Framework. It stood for Remote Duplicate Database Facility. So we laughed about this and moved on while we explained what we meant by RDF and why we thought it would be useful. So, of those objects, as I said, the British Museum has a number, and that was me standing in front of them yesterday. We published them, the public part of our collection, so about 2 million objects, in RDF. That's something we've been doing hand in hand with ResearchBase over the past couple of years. So for instance, you can find one papyrus here. If you look it up in a web browser, you'll see a bunch of information. You can use that web page to get the RDF, or you can directly ask for the RDF. Note, that's deliberately hard to read when it's projected. This is something you might like to do offline if you're interested in the RDF that we publish. But my point is that we do. Our objects are described somehow in RDF, which I'll go into more. We also run, as many people do in this linked data or linked open data project that the W3C and the Tim Berners-Lee, among others, promotes, we run a query endpoint where, given the masses of data that we make public on our collection, it's about 300 million statements at the moment, so a lot of it to find things in. So we offer this query endpoint where you can ask the services that we run questions about the collection. So one, again, not to understand what this says, but that's an example query you might like to bring to our website and run for yourself to see. It asks, using a very crude way to say, deliberately crude, because it's a simple example, tell me things that are related to the Book of the Dead. I've just looked for things that have the title, the Book of the Dead, in our catalog. And you do an aggregate query, and it tells you of those kind of things, this crude way to look for Book of the Dead related material, we have about 1,500 objects. So coming back to this idea that Wikipedia has, that they're all just papyri, you could also run a query, again, pick this up and run it on our website if you're interested. What materials are those? Are among those that compose those 1,500 objects? And we see right up at the top, if we order by how often they occur, you have papyrus, and then linen, and then some interesting things like the sycamore wood. Okay? As part of the assembly of these things, there's all kinds of materials. Okay? It's just to give a flavour of the richness of the description of our objects and the ability to query it through the Sparkle interface. So, I missed this little note down here. I promise there's no more Sparkle. That's it. Just a couple of ideas. There are things that you can see on our almost raw data RDF representation of our collection without writing Sparkle. So if you have a starting point, if somebody gave you this URI that represents Osiris, okay, or if you took the pains to go to the search box, get some full text search results and find out for yourself which one of those identifiers signifies Osiris as a person, you get this page in a web browser, and by clicking over here to say where is that an object to some relationships, you can find very many objects that depict Osiris. Okay? And these go way beyond the Book of the Dead. Okay? Any one of those then you can click on and get a similar page, and here's a nice statue of Osiris. So this is a useful resource that we build on for ResearchBase, this rich data model. And this is what RDF is all about, modeling relationships. Okay, so here we have, that statue depicts Osiris as a person. The CRM ontology is what gives us properties that describe relationships, like depiction, and classes to group the resources together, to know what kind of thing each resource is, and therefore which kind of relationships it might have with other resources. Okay? So CRM, like any ontology, just defines for us what relationships do we talk about and what kind of resources do we describe relationships between. Okay? CRM is rich enough in terms of the classes and relationships that it has that people may have seen Dominic present this before. I really wanted to get a picture of Dominic in front of this, because it's on both of our walls. We study it often, but as I said, he's taking a well-deserved compliment this week. So the CRM has guided us to this kind of graph representation. This is per object. Okay? So each object in the 2 million that we describe in OpenData at the moment is represented by this kind of graph, where every arc is one of these properties representing a relationship, and every node in the graph is described using a class, so you know what kind of thing it is. And you know they have labels attached, so you can make human-readable interfaces out of them, which is what we do. So that's all guided by the CRM ontology that's defined by the ICOM committee, CDOC. CRM, we'd argue, gives us a good and flexible, extensible model for our objects that's rich enough that anything in our catalogue we can find an encoding for, and because it's RDF based, that we can integrate with other people's catalogues too. So we've, in early research based stages, as Alison knows well, we put together Rembrandt themed information, for instance, with the RKD. More recently, we worked with Yale. ResearchBase actually funded Yale to expose some of their collection in RDF using the CRM ontology. We put that together. We're working with the Rijksmuseum at the moment. As nice as CRM is as a model for objects, it doesn't necessarily capture the things that I said at the start of the talk about the Book of the Dead. Partly because a lot of the ideas that are the structuring for Moshe's work are not by any means physical, catalogable objects, but they're conceptual. Indeed, the whole idea of the Book of the Dead as a consistent whole itself is just a concept. It's not a physical object. It's not something that a museum can own. And the relationship of that abstract work to traditions, which again are abstract. They're just a collection of, they're just a projection of what we can see from remains. Again, they're entirely abstract. And the relationship between these abstract things, the derivation of the general tradition from specific traditions to the actual object, those manifestations, those papyri and linens that we have, are rather different kinds of relationship than the CRM itself naturally describes. So what we want to capture in a data model to drive a website as a digital scholarly edition of Moshe's work is to capture all of these things. So the abstract idea of the Book of the Dead, the idea of Moshe's own work, the decomposition of the Book of the Dead abstractly into spells and stereotypical vignettes, and then the spells within traditions, and then particular spells and vignettes that that are left to us by the remains of these funerary objects. And we want to make clear that relationship of what Moshe does in translating the traditions to the objects that he actually used as inspiration from our museum and others. So, our solution to extending our model for the objects in CRM to these abstract ideas of derivative works was to use the sister ontology of the CRM from, again from the CDOC committee, called Ferberu. Okay. Whereas the means by which CRM as an ontology came about was taking earlier work of that same committee on an entity relationship, on a relational database model, and saying, in order to be open and extensible, we need to move away from relational databases and towards this graph-like, object-oriented, in their terms, not necessarily mine, but object-oriented version of that model. What Ferberu does is pick Ferber, which was of the same form, a very 90s relational entity relationship model, and transform it into this ontological form, into this object-oriented form, so-called. In order to see the mix of CRM and Ferberu, whereas before, I'm not sure if I made this quite clear, sorry to skip backwards, bad practice, but the properties for the CRM, we gave P numbers, okay? And the classes, the kind of things, we gave E numbers, they're entities, they're types for entities. In order to distinguish the classes and properties in Ferberu, we just use different letters. So instead of P for properties, we use R for relationships, and instead of E for entities, we use F, because it's the next letter, I think. What the classes and properties that we reuse from Ferberu allow us to talk about is things like works, derivative works, composite works, acts of expression, and manifestations in physical objects. Okay? So we're going to mix this idea of works and expressions on the abstract level with the concrete level, which is the manifestation, which is where the meat is with the CRM described objects that we have. And this was our attempt at that. This was our kind of working document. I'm not going to laboriously go through the whole thing, but just to say, at the top, we have this something of this class of complex work, a work, an abstract thing that has parts for the Book of the Dead. Down the right-hand side, we have Moshe's work. So at the top is complex work of the volume that we're representing in web style, in web data style. And on the left, we have these traditions. So we have the decomposition into spells, but we also have versions of those as expressions of them. And we can tag those things when they get down to expressions, which are the individual paragraphs within the spell, with things like the language that's used, hieratic versus hieroglyphic, okay? Whereas clearly the language down the right-hand side is English. This is Moshe's English linear narrative broken up to reflect the structure over here in the abstract. Now, at the bottom right-hand corner on our working version of this diagram, how to use the two ontologies together to represent this abstract and concrete ideas together, we had how do we tie this together with the actual text, okay? On the right-hand side, tellingly, with Moshe's text, because that's what we want to make a website from. And this is, I believe, potentially the contentious part of my talk, so I'm going to leave it aside for a minute and discuss it at the end, when we're nearer to the discussion. I'm going to give a little bit more context to what we're doing, and then come back to this question. In order, partly, to tell you about Research Space and also how this fits with our wider work. So Research Space, you may have heard, uses the same technology, RDF and linked data, to make a collaborative environment for research. It's a project that's hosted at the British Museum, and the British Museum researchers are among our clients while we develop this system. But the aim is to make an open source system that's open for all cultural heritage research and where you can aggregate data from any GLAM style data, so galleries, libraries, archives, museums. We'll give tools to help make RDF from those collections or descriptions, catalogues, and then the tools that once you have CRM represented data will let you do many research-oriented tasks on top of the data, on top of the aggregated data from multiple institutions. So among the components that we're developing that we hope will help researchers, and this is really just among, there's all kinds of collaborative tools like forums, workflows, work queues, all of the ways that you'd structure working in a team. But the ones that I wanted to bring out for relationship to this are search and browse, so using the semantics in this CRM representation to help people find the thing or things that they're interested in, data annotation, and image annotation. And none of this, nobody is expected to use Sparkle to do these tools. Much of it will be affected using RDF and Sparkle, but the idea is not that researchers see that they're given more friendly tools. So here is one, here's the search system, which some of you may have seen from Dominic in the past in our prototype form. Were you to look for Osiris, unlike at the endpoint, as I showed before, which was just full text search, just find me something that has text associated with it, that has this term, that has this string of characters, Osiris, somewhere in it. Instead, when you search in this system, you disambiguate by picking, you get this drop down as you're typing, and you pick what do you mean by this bit of text that you're typing. And it's ranked, so it quickly recognizes as you're typing, the most likely thing that you're talking about is the person or the agent in general, depends who you ask what defines a person, called Osiris, and you hover over that, you get the note, which clarifies for you, it's the ancient fertility god, Lord of blah, 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 versus any of these other things that you could mean, okay? And when you search, you're not just doing a text search and looking for this string, you're looking for things that explicitly have some connection in the RDF model with that resource that represents Osiris as an agent. More than that, when you've picked Osiris, and you're searching for objects, you get the choice of what relationships with Osiris you'd like the objects that you find to have. Okay? And unlike that expansive diagram of the way that we represent the objects and all of those relationships, you don't have to understand the individual relationships. There's abstraction here. So instead of saying the object carries an inscription and the inscription has a text and the text mentions Osiris, you can just say the object is somehow about Osiris and find that means of there being a connection between the object and the person and others under that abstraction And then in the new system, this is what we're developing this year, when you get your search results, get an explanation, okay, of all of those possibilities that we just abstracted over for there being an about connection between the object and the person, which in particular are fulfilled by an object that you're interested in. So we can also combine these things. So I've got two clauses here. I built on about Osiris to say also made of papyrus. Again, papyrus is part of our materials taxonomy. So I picked exactly that term, which is the RDF representation of our material authority, and said the objects must be both about Osiris and made of that particular material. Disappointingly, you only get 7 results at the moment. Okay? That's because at the moment what we have is primarily just an RDF version of our catalogue, where some things are more catalogued than others. Ironically, if I didn't ask for made of papyrus, I tried this also, and just looked for things that were made that were about Osiris, I get lots of results, because I get lots of coins. The numismatists are crazy for tagging Osiris, whereas these 1500 Book of the Dead objects that we have are not so tagged yet with Osiris. Okay? And this is the point about research base. What we're doing is not just a, here's our data in some form, a la, let's say, Europeana. We're giving tools that say, you have data, here is the data, in such a rich way that you can then go and refine it, okay? That you can add more relationships. And even more so, this new phase of work is about justifying why you challenge information that's there or add information that wasn't present before. So it's provenance. We know which researchers or which projects are making a claim and give them means to record why they make that claim. So to do that, is what we call data annotation. Okay? If I pick one of those objects from that search, which is a somewhat fragmented papyrus, which is a Book of the Dead one, yes it is, then I get the fields associated with it. Using the annotation tool, I can add an annotation. So my example here is, if it was recorded as depicting Osiris, I can at once challenge that. So that's my choice here. Either I confirm what's already there, I deny it, or I'm indifferent to it. Okay. If I challenge it, I can, from the terminology, pick another candidate if I want to. Okay. I could equally add a new depiction when there wasn't one before. Now, so I can challenge the existing and give reason to replace it, or add information using the data annotation tool. But what I'm doing is looking at the graph that represents the object, which CRM helps us build, and saying, I'm not sure about this edge, or that edge should really be attached to a different resource, or there should be another such edge in that relationship to something you already have. I'm just manipulating the graph where things are explicit. Somehow that's different from the annotation that I want to do with Mosh's text. Okay? So another research-based tool, which is definitely one that is usable by Book of the Dead, and this is something we've started to apply and would like to do more, is image annotation. Okay? So again, given that object that I found through search, that fragmented text, I can find this image of it, I can draw this border, I was lazy and just drew a rectangle, but we have all of this geometry to go closer. That border within that image becomes a resource in the graph. And then I can attach to that something like, that represents Osiris. Okay? So within the image, I can make a semantic annotation. That's useful for the vignettes, and we use it to help enrich the data that we hold towards what Moshe drew out in his book. For him, it was mostly about making a figure with some section of the image. Okay, so we turn that around and say, okay, what you had in a figure now we draw as a boundary, as a border, within the full image that we have. Okay?
but make the same annotation. That's what's represented here, that's what's represented in another place. And this makes the whole work more searchable. Okay? You can really say, not just what does the vignette in the abstract, which characters does it represent, but in the surviving fragments, what do those fragments still represent? What hasn't been lost? Okay, so finding a fragment which still clearly represents Osiris is something that we can easily build into the website from this image annotation. Now, what we don't do much of in research space so far, this is the first time that we were asked, but we are asked it more and more, it seems now, as people start to use the platform, is for annotation within text. Okay? So this is really, I hope it's okay with this, because the manuscript is not for general distribution, but I picked a small part, what Moshe's manuscript looks like. And you'll see in the spell, so there's the title and the preamble, there are, for instance, two mentions of Osiris. Okay? But there's nothing to say in the data, if we just represent either the whole manuscript or according to the Ferber model that I had before, these are self-contained parts of a more complex work. There's nothing to say that any of those represent, mention Osiris or mention Ra. What we want is that text annotation. At that point, I believe many people in this community, which I don't know well yet, but I hope to, would have a solution in mind, which is not our solution. Before I go on to that, just to mention also, the footnotes are part of the manuscript. And the footnotes are where Moshe, in his manuscript, relates this version one, which is the Memphite tradition of Book of the Dead Spell one, to objects that have informed his aggregated translation. Okay? And he even goes down to the detail of which paragraphs survive in those objects. For me as a computer scientist, this is a lookup table. That's his identifier for an object, but then he has this lookup table where he says, this is the catalogue number at the British Museum for what I call 10809. And similarly, he has the accession numbers at the Louvre, etc. Okay? So part of our job in taking his text and turning it into RDF is to look through the footnotes and make those object connections. Another part is to look through the text and make the mentions of characters and places explicit. Because those are all connections to the system that we have at the moment, right? To our objects and the wider context of objects. Okay? We believe it would be interesting to present a site where not only can you ask which spells and which paragraphs of which spells in which tradition, represent Osiris, but also which objects are they associated with, and what is their connection to other objects at that museum that either might be papyri that weren't selected by Moshe, or might be wholly different objects like the statue that I was just mentioning, Osiris. So, in order to make this text annotation, we have some choices. Having worked in NLP a little bit, not as much as Isabel, who's currently doing her PhD at my alma mater Sheffield on NLP, I hope that she would confirm that this idea of standoff annotation is common in text analysis. You don't disturb the text, you just say between character 50 and character 55, there's a mention of Osiris, for instance. Okay? That's one choice. If we make that choice, somehow we have to associate with these offsets into the text. What are we talking about? We have to say both, is this a mention of a person or a place or an object? And we want to make reference to which person do we believe it is, or which object has been talked about, represented in a way that we can build a website that lets you navigate between those things and explore these relationships. Another choice, which on another project somebody just brought to me this week, is we could just make a custom XML schema to do this. You can put tags around things in text in XML, to say person, place. I was really told, let's do this, let's make another schema. I'm not big on making new schemas. Much better is, why don't we use an existing schema that's well used and well supported by tools, TEI? Well, indeed, there's several of the things that we want to represent that one can represent in TEI. One can even transform it into a website, and there's some good work on transforming that into the CRM model, which would be our relationship between the data of the text and the data of the objects and things surrounding it. What TEI doesn't necessarily do is represent so well the more further related aspects of these things. So I don't just have one text. Here I have a collection of texts that have deep structural relationships with one another and the derivation through traditions. And I have data about the abstract traditions, like which part of the Egyptian kingdom did that come from. Okay? Those are the things that go beyond just annotating text. So for my taste, the way that I would mark up text is using RDFA, RDFing annotations, the W3C standard for annotating text on the web. What does that bring? Well, HTML, or properly XHTML, so well-formed HTML, with RDFA in place, is itself HTML. So immediately, I don't have to do some conversion of this to make a website. It is fragments of web context that I can immediately put into the digital edition. It's open-ended. I'm not following some fixed schema like TEI. I'm pointing at the vocabulary and at the instances, the existing resources, that I want to use, okay, extensively. So I can pick from CRM, I can pick from Ferberu, I can pick from the British Museum objects at the moment, and the Louvre objects when they're available as link open data, without any change in schema. Okay? And then I can generically, for the people who just want the data, with a generic tool, you can scrape out the RDF to bring into projects like ResearchBase and like other projects we work with, for instance, Culture Brokers, that deal with RDF data independently from the text, or immediately display the text without negatively affecting people. Okay? What I really do, essentially, in RDFA is say, where there's a hyperlink, that's exactly the relationship that exists in RDF, but unlike plain HTML, I'll actually use a vocabulary to say what the relationship is. Okay? I'll be cautious that what I point to with a hyperlink actually identifies the thing that I'm talking about. So it identifies Osiris that then becomes a page about Osiris that might aggregate the content for this specific context of Book of the Dead. And, well, I hope that's clear. It works alongside the web model. This is the recommendation. Sorry to talk about this as a technologist, but this is the recommendation for publishing annotated text. It's not that we want to abandon TEI. There are a lot of tool sets around TEI, but the interaction between RDF, like CRM, and TEI, it seems so far, but please correct me if I'm wrong, either on or off camera, I'm quite open about it, has been that one produces TEI and then extracts things like CRM from it. Because this combination of CRM and Ferberu is the richer, more general model, I'd rather see it the other way around. If somebody wants to consume TEI, I would rather produce that for them from the richer model. So that was my contentious point. And having made it, I would deliberately say, any questions or rotten tomatoes, just write me. Thanks for listening in the meantime.
So, any questions or rotten tomatoes? Floor's open.
So I wondered if you might say a little bit more about your statement that the order in which you might encode something and then transform it into another format. You said that CRM is a lot richer a model than TEI, therefore you'd rather see it transformed in that direction. My My understanding of both CRM and TEI is that each one could be almost infinitely expressive depending on what you're trying to encode and what you're putting in there. So you could, in different models, encode something in TEI and then produce slightly simpler CRM out of it, or vice versa, depending on your model. So it may be that your model, what you want to express can be more richly expressed in CRM, and that's why you're looking at it that way around. I just wondered if you could say a bit more about
For me, it's a question of, yes, they're both in a sense extensible. XML was always meant to be extensible, that's the X in XML. But what it means is defining specific structure and specific tags for those extensions that you want to make. And the question is...
Is it sensor of CRM, right?
It is, but you don't affect the structure that anybody else who doesn't know your extensions is looking through. This is the big problem with XML. When you make a schema change, you break the expectations of the client. When you extend a graph model, which is even beyond RDF, and hopefully graph is the less technical term than RDF. RDF is one kind of graph model that's recommended for the web, that has come out of the web consortium. Graph models in general are what people are building at scale. It's what is generally called knowledge graph by the big companies these days, by the Googles, Yahoos, Microsofts, Facebooks, Twitters, etc. The nice part of a graph model, as I was saying, is you extend it by introducing new kinds of relationships. Those are more easily ignored to start with because you haven't affected the simpler structure, which can still be investigated without looking to these extensions. And in this semantic web context, there's two further things that you can do. One, everything's resolvable. You can look up what do the extensions mean at a canonical place. Instead of saying, somebody introduced this schema extension, I'm going to follow them, but I don't know what the resource is, and a third party doesn't know where to look to see what the extra tags I'm using are. XML should have done that properly, but never did, resolvability. In linked data, it's absolutely core. You define a new property, it must be resolvable. Somebody must be able to find out, okay? And then it builds in its own abstraction. So if you had a relationship in a graph model that we've all used, for a year, like some of our CRM things, and then we introduce an extension, part of the power of the semantic representation is that I can say, yes, I have something more specific, but I infer from that automatically the general thing that you can still be looking for. So I can look for the specificity without breaking your expectation of something more general. That's among the reasons that I believe in RDF-based representations.
Thank you.
I wondered, we've just been working in a project which was trying to align CDOC and FEBRU. What's interesting is thinking about the people who are actually implementing it. At the coal face, what you have is a specialist of some kind who is making some statements about a particular thing. And he may be a specialist in hieroglyphics or in Greek manuscripts. He may be interested in the text. He may be interested in the object. He may be interested in the concept. And the difficulty in the end is corralling the people, isn't it? The system can be absolutely wonderful, but the really interesting thing about this is that we're trying to bring different kinds of specialists together. And I know that the words are important and the objects are not. And the people in the museum know that the objects are important and the words are not. And we're all working with an often not very well expressed hierarchy of value. It's really hard work to try and develop ontologies that are really going to be used reliably by these different kinds of expert. But the interesting thing about our project is that everybody we were working with was interested in words. But we were trying to relate them to the physical manuscripts on which they existed, but words came first. And you started with a collection of objects, and then this manuscript material, Osiris turned up first as an object like that. and now he's turning up in texts.
That was probably my bias rather than Moshe's, though, who's working.
No, not Moshe. Moshe King is a text man.
Exactly.
And what I do wonder about, looking at your footnote, the Moshe footnote, I thought there are some very interesting things in terms of relationships to develop about the what do you mean when you say this particular paragraph falls within the tradition of this particular spell. There's a whole ontology there, isn't there, of internal textual relationship.
Yeah, and one that we have by no means the answer for yet, and may not in this project.
Well, it relates very strongly to what we've been doing, actually, so there might be some synergies there.
Maybe we should try and...
Because we're very interested in exactly that. How do you talk about... And there's some new work, there's a new project just started on biblical texts, which raise a lot of these, especially little bits that circulate on their own, a lot of these questions. But I mean, I think it's a really interesting challenge, this really making the web bring objects and words together.
So to further complicate, apart from the text-oriented people and the objects and catalogue-oriented people, the other community that we want to bring in, which is another reason that I'm anxious that we use this style of annotation pointing straight to the ontology with RDFA, is we're bringing together the web community. Because not to disparage foregoing work, but it's easy to make a very static website out of the structure that you've encoded in your schema, whatever kind of schema it is. But to make a really interactive website that lets you explore through many different dimensions, and those dimensions are there here. You look, you know, through the spell, or through the versions, through the geography, through the characters. That needs quite a rich web experience. I genuinely wish that I'd come to show you today what that web experience looks like, but we didn't hire our web developer until now. The advert goes out next week, if you know anybody who's interested. But it's having the technology that is compatible with that kind of, you know, dynamic, very contemporary web experience as well is important to us.